flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Stacy Dales, take it away.
Stacy Dales, NFL Network correspondent.
Doing great. Good morning, everybody.
Breaking down the Bears beating news around the NFL.
Caleb Williams, Bears fans, ecstatic. This was really the best case scenario for the Chicago Bears. Gets a dynamic offensive play caller and teacher in Ben Johnson.
Former WNBA star.
Clean steal over to Dales, easy land. Stacy Dales off a beautiful feed from Elaine Paul.
Stacy Dales with Mully and Haw.
And I live in Chicago, and I do The Score radio. A little plug there.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our friend Stacy Dales, NFL Network, and she joins us now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Stacy, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. It was a special treat to get to see you guys in the flesh at Hallis Hall last week. So I'm missing that today, but I'm doing good. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. The weather's turning in Chicago, and the Super Bowl is like a week and a half away.
Thank God for our buddy Bob Vassilopoulos. He made a, as he does with everything, he got a photo of us. So that was wonderful. What kindness.
Yeah. It was awesome.
He's always chronicling things. So, Stacy,
yes.
that was a very impressive news conference, and you got a chance to interview Ben Johnson afterward. We talked to him a little bit later in the week, and, you know, very impressive guy. And you feel really like the Bears are turning a corner in terms of the amount of money they invested in their head coach. And to go out and get the top guy in the cycle, at least the young guy that people were pursuing, is it really says something about things hopefully changing a little bit for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I mean, as we talked about, and as I even talked about with Coach Johnson, I mean, it was really a masterclass. There were, even just his presentation, the way he delivers, there were no filler words, meaning, you know, he doesn't hum and haw. He has a very, and I've talked to you guys multiple times about it. He's extremely deliberate in how he delivers, and that's how he talks to his players. And you can see that he's very passionate, but he's measured in his passion. And so his deliberate nature, I think, is a steady steady element that I think is going to help Caleb Williams. And, you know, to see those players there, I thought was encouraging, whether they were asked to or not. I mean, I was told they weren't, but, you know, it's a good look when DJ Moore and Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze and Cole Kmet are sitting in front and, you know, just adjacent to all the brass. So it was a really good day for the Bears, I thought, and just kind of promising. And I think, you know, the foundation is slowly being built. I love the input, you know, the added defensive coordinator in Dennis Allen. I think, like, the first thing he's going to do is say, we need a pass rush. Because that's what, go ask Cam Jordan, go ask DeMario Davis. I mean, so I think it's, I think I like that direction strongly. And you know, another very widely respected coach who's very measured in his approach in Dennis Allen.
Stacey, we talk a lot about coaches and alignment with the general manager and who has the final say. And we that gets a lot of discussion in a lot of NFL cities like Chicago. The question is this, is knowing the league as well as you do and seeing guys like Ben Johnson, offensive coordinators and play callers take over as a head coach, how important is that to a guy who already has basically two jobs, play caller and head coach? Do they really want to be as involved in personnel decisions as we may assume? Or do they prefer to have maybe the general manager's voice be either equal or just as loud as theirs?
I don't know, David, if it's necessarily that they're involved in a specific player personnel decision. I think it's they're involved in these are the type of players that I need. Unlike, I just think about the Packers and Matt LaFleur and what he wants to do, his vision for his offense. He wants to have a wide receiver by committee type group. And now you can argue the Packers need to go get a superstar on the outside. I mean, because Watson hasn't proved to be healthy in his tenure in Green Bay. But the way Matt LaFleur likes to spread the ball offensively, it is best read, best option, and let's go to that guy. So one game, it could be Watson having a big game. It could be Dobbs the next game. So I think it's that's the vision. And Brian Gutekunst goes out and gets those type of players for Matt LaFleur. I think that conversation is very important. So for Ryan Poles to sit down, for instance, with, Coach Johnson and say, hey, listen, what kind of players, let's talk about the foundation of this scheme. He wants to be multiple, right? Lots of motions, lots of disguise, lots of illusion. What type of players fit into that? Where do we need the heart of our offense to start? I'm going to say it's the offensive line. I think the offensive line is going to be the most important building process for the Chicago Bears, period. I think the center position is going to be the most important decision they make. And I also think the Bears are going to strike in the running back group. This is a deep running back class coming in. And I think they're going to, like, when you have, like, think about, like, Walter Payton. Think about what's happening now with Saquon Barkley. And look how far the Ravens got with Derrick Henry. And look how far the Lions got with Jahmyr Gibbs, even losing David Montgomery. I think the running back position and the offensive line group are going to be two areas that Ben Johnson says, this is the type of offensive lineman I want. These are the type of run schemes, power run schemes, outside zone schemes that I want to do. And these are the type of players and makeup that I want. So that's where I think his influence will be. And then maybe free agency is a different conversation.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think that we discussed it a little bit earlier. You know, unless you've got like an incredible generational talent at the running back position, be it Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, whomever, you need an offensive line to run the ball. And you need to run the ball to run play action, which he does very well. So I think that they need an upgrade by far on the offensive line. And the offensive line, it's a pity he can't bring a couple players with him. But man, they've got a great offensive line in Detroit. They've also got really good running backs. So I think that's a twofold thing.
It is. When I think about what I'm looking for right now with the Bears is what specific things are transpiring that are like a complete 180 from what we've seen. And I think that's where Ben Johnson is going to show his colors. Like, what if I don't believe Ashton Jeanty, for instance, is going to be sitting there with pick what at 10?
Mm-hmm, 10.
But what if they are so brazen as to say, we got 8 picks in this draft, we got a bunch early. What if we move up and get this kid? Like, there's your Derrick Henry right there. Like, I don't know. I'm looking for specific tells. You know, so I look at Declan Doyle being hired, right? So there's mm-hmm. he's 28 years old. He was the tight ends coach under Sean Payton. I have a feeling that he's going to be very involved in the run blocking scheme. Mm. He spent time with, obviously, Ferentz at Iowa, who is masterful with offensive linemen. And I'm not suggesting he's going to be the offensive line coach because he was hired as the offensive coordinator. But enough time with Sean Payton. And the way Sean Payton plans, you won't walk into Sean Payton's office in a single day and he won't have a plan, strategic plan for that day, and he will implement it almost to a T. And then he'll do that for an entire season. So when Ben Johnson talks about wanting somebody energized, young, and also another piece to it is the analytics element. And I think there's probably something in Declan Doyle's background, even albeit short-term coaching in the NFL, that he is kind of strategic when it comes to, I'm guessing, analytics. And so he'll be able to sit down at the start of the week and on Tuesday put a packet on Ben Johnson's desk while Ben is watching tape on the next opponent and saying, here are things that I think are critical and, like, they're outlined. And so he's going to be up all night, you know, burning the coals up all night, and then be able to hand that kind of stuff into Ben Johnson, and then they cultivate a plan and move forward into the game. So that's kind of that young, energizing guy. I imagine, again, analytics there. But these are really interesting decisions. And so this draft is going to fascinate me and kind of what they do to really improve the trenches in the running back room.
So, Stacey, Super Bowl 59, you'll be covering the Eagles for the NFL Network next week in New Orleans. There will be a lot of conversations about not necessarily how the Eagles got there, but the fact that Nick Sirianni is now in his second Super Bowl in 4 seasons. How do you describe, how would you answer that question, and how would you describe his ascension from basically coordinator to head coach?
One thing I've learned about Nick Sirianni is he's constantly surrounding himself with the things that he believes create a championship atmosphere. So when something doesn't work, he moves on quickly. So for instance, Sean Desai was a quick experiment, right? He thought he would operate the scheme that he wanted to do. And it's by no mistake that Vic Fangio, whom Sean Desai is an understudy of, actually did the scheme. And he went out and said, you know, okay, Sean didn't work, but now I want to go get the actual guy who created the scheme, and I'm going to go get Vic. I mean, those are simple decisions that, you know, making changes, moving on from who I think is an outstanding guy in Brian Johnson, who's now, by the way, you know, over with the Washington Commanders, and how ironic that he runs basically the pass game coordinator, and he's the offensive line coach, the assistant head coach, I think. Like, that's a really hell of a football coach. And look what he's done in Washington with their group and their offensive line and their running back scheme and all that stuff. So I just think Nick Sirianni is extremely adaptable. I talked on the field with him on Sunday, and I was like, kudos to you for going out and getting Vic. You know, everybody thought, well, Vic was in Miami, didn't work out. He's like, oh, my God, I love that guy. He's the best. Like, he knew what he wanted, and he went out and got it. And I think he does that. I think he went out and got Kellen Moore because he wanted to do some different things with the football offensively, and that's what he did. And that's exactly how they've adapted with the ground game, how they've implemented Saquon, and they're riding him. I just think the other thing I noticed yesterday about Nick Sirianni is he shared in his press conference, Molly and David, that they actually put – Bears fans that are listening are going to love this – they actually put together a reel of Peanut Punch highlights. Peanut, the great Peanut Tillman. You guys, you know Peanut well. Sure. He's amazing. And for them, for Vic and that group to take Peanut Tillman and put together his career highlights of punching the ball out, and they had 3 of those on Sunday.
Yeah.
3 of them. I think maybe even four. I mean, even special teams had one. So that's just smart, good coaching. And it's what's really crazy about that market is if they lose three games now, everybody wants to fire Nick Sirianni. But I would think twice about that, Eagles fans.
You know, it's so funny you say that because I was talking to a friend of mine and we're just kind of going over the game. And it's like, well, Andy Reid over Nick Sirianni. Well, of course, you know, Mahomes over Hurts. And, you know, maybe Vic over Spags. Maybe that's a draw. Maybe. But, like, you're looking at the game and you're thinking three-peat. Like, what an extraordinary thing. But, my God, you know, the Eagles have been there a couple of times now. In a short period of time, they got their own thing going that's pretty extraordinary, the way they've built up that defensive line and kind of transitioned through players and still as strong as ever.
Yeah, and I think their defense is, like, both of these teams, Molly, it's such a good point because Spags is, I kind of obsess over how he, what he gets out of his players and how he schemes and what he's able to create up front, how he uses Chris Jones. Trent McDuffie's one of the best, like, he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. And then I look over at Fangio. They're the number one defense in football.
Right.
They go from 26-1 after one season with Vic Fangio. And, like, it's really cool. I'm covering them, so I'm obviously right. pretty passionate about, I'll be on the NFC side of things. But I've covered both of these teams this year. Those guys get the most out of their players, and this is going to come down to, like, who doesn't make the mistakes, right? Commanders had turnovers. And I think it's going to come down to, like, literally a sack or turnovers or something very minor. I think it's going to be another close game, just like Super Bowl 57 was between these two teams. But I know one thing. The first thing every player in my post-game interview said to me was, we got to finish the job. Like, they didn't finish it three seasons ago against the Chiefs, and they'll be on a mission for this one. There's no doubt about it. But we're looking at a pretty impressive dynasty in Kansas City. Say what you want about the refs. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is magical.
The refs thing is hilarious.
Yeah, it is a little hilarious. A little bit overdone, but it is funny. Stacey,
yeah.
Not to belabor the Saquon Barkley point, but I wonder, as much as you know about his path to Philadelphia from the Giants. Mm-hmm. Were the Bears ever a real possibility? Did any other team really have a chance if he was really one of these guys, Penn State guy? Philly always seemed to be the team where he would land. Because I think that you look at what he has done this mm-hmm. season, and you're like, wow, could he have been bought for the come to Chicago for the right price?
No. No, he wanted to go to Philly. Not just because, you know, of the connections, but because he wanted to run the ball behind that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no question about it. He has actually said that, David, publicly. You know, when I talk to their offensive linemen in the games I've covered this year, it's a relationship with a running back unlike I've covered in my 16 years in the NFL. I mean, the way, how in unison they are, it is, it's extremely special. Like, he wanted to go and run with a group. And it was funny because I was talking to Jordan Mailata several weeks ago when I was covering them. And he said to me, it finally feels like our offensive line, is seen. Like, they've been one of the best ever. And if you watch Jeff Stoutland coach, I was watching them deal with this query of Cam Jurgens not playing, and he wasn't going to play. I knew in the morning he wasn't playing. I just couldn't phrase it that he was going to still be active. So, like, he was their emergency plan. So he was injured, his back was injured, and Landon Dickerson ended up starting, which that was their plan, but they had to work Cam out. And I watched Jeff Stoutland, and I talked to him, and he goes, we're just talking, and I'm like, how's Landon going to handle this? He's like, he's great. He's a natural. He said he's a conductor. He'll have these guys going. Don't forget he played this position in college. Then he goes over and does this 25-30-minute workout with Cam Jurgens, and then he does it with Landon Dickerson. And he's just a technician. Like, I think the Bears offensive line coach might be the most important person they hire.
Yeah, it's a big job.
It's a huge job. I mean, huge. And so I just think Saquon was always going to go to Philly, and like the way that they communicate, he goes back to them after every play and they tell him, hey, we want to do it this way. We want to block this way this time, or we can get you a hole here. And then the difference with him now is he's not just hitting the perimeter. They've actually worked with him, and I talked with one coach. They worked with him on the nuances of playing between the tackles this season, because he was always that hit the outside and go. And also, he's a lot more decisive in his one cut. So it's not so much, if you watch him run in the past, and these are from my conversations internally with the team. You know, he could be, I'm going to cut left. No, I'm going to go right. I'm going to go left. No, now it's, he is so decisive. It is literally, here's where I'm going to tiptoe, and now here's the cut. And it's boom, it's gone, it's decisive. And it's not only his relationship with the offensive line and their communication, but it is them working him between the tackles. And now you just don't know where he's coming from. So, gosh, it's going to be fun to see how Spagnuolo and those guys try to develop a game plan, because nobody in the playoffs has been able to stop them.
Great stuff. Really appreciate it, Stacey. Great to catch up.
Safe travels.
Awesome. See you guys from New Orleans.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy 5 and get 5 free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue, and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former 3-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine, and he joins us now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Mully, I didn't see you at the Romova Theater at Sox Fest. Were you hiding, or were you there on Saturday?
No, I did not attend, sadly. I just had to take the weekend off and enjoy stuff, and I couldn't risk annoying myself. I love going to Sox Fest, and I would have gladly gone if I had heard from you, Bruce. But I felt like the idea of going down to the U of I and then driving back with my son so we could go to it, and then driving back to U of I didn't think it was fair.
I hear you.
I still love the White Sox.
It was a great weekend for White Sox fans, but a lot of news, certainly Cub-wise. Where do you guys want to begin?
Let's start with the Cubs, Bruce, because I think when you talk about Ryan Pressly coming to a team that needs a closer, did they overpay in getting a $14 million a year closer at 36 years old, especially for a guy who needed to be talked into waiving his no-trade clause? And did he have to be guaranteed the closer job to come to Chicago?
Well, look, they missed out on Scott, right? I mean, they had a 4-year offer in on Scott. He went to the Dodgers. They missed out on Yates. He went to the Dodgers. So they had to improve their bullpen with some veterans. They're not done yet. And obviously, this is, I think, on paper, and as you allude to, he's 36 years old, but he's still a very efficient bullpen guy, bumped out of the closer's role for Hader when he went over there a year ago. So this guy, it's been one of the better closers in the game. He was a setup man last year, and they needed to address this bullpen. And there, as I said, there are a couple other veterans out there like Ryan Stanek and David Robertson that they've had conversations with. So I don't think they're done yet as far as
getting the bullpen up to date. Did they have to guarantee him the job before he would execute the trade?
Well, I mean, okay, you're guaranteeing the job. Does the manager say you're automatically – is it a hater situation where he says, I'm not going to pitch unless I'm the closer? I don't think that's the case. He is going to be your closer. And you know, you have Porter Hodge, who's developing into a fine young – power arm in the back bullpen, and he was the Cubs closer. This gives him a chance to continue to develop with him back there as well. And, you know, he will be your closer because he has that status. And, you know, why would you bring him in to be a setup guy? I mean, you're not going to pay him, you know, he's making 14 and a half. The Cubs are going to pay 8.5, maybe $9.5 million with relocation fees for taxes and coming to Chicago. So I don't think you're going to pay this guy that kind of money to be your setup man.
Does this mean Bregman's not coming? If the Astros then sign him back, does it mean the Cubs taking this guy off their hands helped give them the money to cut that deal?
They did, yeah. And I think you can start calling the Cubs the Astros East, right? I mean, they're not done with that. Stanek was a former Houston Astro. Bregman, you know, the conversations have been going along about him coming to the Cubs. Never a real long conversation, 5 year, 6 year type situation yet. But, you know, there seems to be money made open here for Bregman to come back, and the wonky way that they'd put Altuve in left and Paredes at second base. It doesn't look right. There's still, you know, a ways away from getting Bregman back, but he's always wanted to go back there. He turned down the 6-year, $156 million contract from them. And, you know, I would say that he's coming back hat in hand. I think that everything that the manager said and Altuve said over the weekend at their fest in Houston indicates that the door is still open for him to go back.
All right, Bruce, Mark Burley getting a statue is a big deal. July 11th, you circle it on the calendar. That was a great moment Friday at Sox Fest. Are the Sox going to add to this roster before spring training? Because their payroll is very, very low, and the experience level is even lower.
Well, they will, but, I mean, it's not going to be big names, and it's not going to be big money. They will add, you know, to bullpen. You know, again, you have these outstanding-looking young starters coming along. You have guys like Smith and guys in the minor leagues that are coming along. Schultz and Smith are the two top left-handed pitchers rated in the minor leagues. They're going to be coming along this year. So you need to have bullpen people that can take care of those starts. You know, if they're going five, hopefully six once in a while. You know, again, you can't have them going longer than that. The bullpen is going to be the key as to whether or not these young pitchers are going to improve and they're going to have a better record. So I think they'll continue to try to add to their bullpen.
You know, it's interesting because with the White Sox, it's about the past, it's about the future, but it's not really about the right now. In terms of like living in the moment, we're looking for a fast-forward button.
You know, it's well put, Molly. It's really well put. The idea that they can't identify what this year is going to look like. So is it going to be 100 losses? Is it going to be 110? Could it be the same as last year? All they are counting on is that they have better talent, young players moving toward being everyday players and pitchers, and that they're going to be better in the future. But you said it right. The right now is hard to identify, and nobody, including, you know, everybody with the White Sox, you know, starting with Getz Down, I asked and other people asked, you know, what do you think, you know, people could depend on for a record this year? And they have no answer.
great stuff, Bruce. Hope you had a good time.
Thanks,
at Sox
Bruce.
Fest.
Appreciate
All right,
buddy.
Guys. Have a great week.
That is Bruce Levine. Always fun to talk to Bruce.
I maintain that this is the line of the that remains true about the Sox.
they could lose 100 games and still be the most improved team in baseball.
Right, but I mean, that tells you how bad they were.
It's so bad. Tells you. Yeah. But I just don't know what they're going to add. I don't know who's out there still to add. They need another pitcher to trust. They want to develop their young guys. There's a lot of excitement around those guys. The biggest buzz at the Romova Theater, it was a cool, intimate setting. Colson Montgomery, George Wolko, Brian Ramos, all the guys who are kind of on the way. And you're right. Everything is about, let's hit the fast forward button to get there because the present doesn't
Noah
seem.
Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767. We're going to bring in our friend Ross Tucker, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl. And can't wait to get some football ideas out of Russ. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Do you like our guy Bruce Levine reporting that the Cubs are hanging around in the Alex Bregman Derby and still looming as a possible landing spot if he wants a short-term deal? How about Bruce also reporting that they've been in touch with 39-year-old former White Sox reliever David Robertson as well as some backup infielders? Don't believe they have more moves to make.
David Robertson, also a former Cub and White Sox reliever.
I think it was. I think it was more like a
tongue in cheek. Yeah,
kind of. Don't you think?
I think that Bregman still being in the mix. I don't know if the Cubs are being used here as leverage. I would love for that to happen. I would love for them to find the money somehow and make him an offer that he can't refuse and come to Chicago, play third base, wait it out for Matt Shaw, and let the Cubs contend, because that's what it's going to take, an all-star bat like that, Alex Bregman in the lineup, for me to be convinced that they have done everything possible to put a better product and team on the field in 2025. Really enjoyed the Ryan Pressly Zoom session. It spoke to everything that he has struggled with over the past week. He was in his car outside the school waiting to go in for a parent-teacher conference doing a Zoom on his smartphone. And he spoke to the things that we have talked about. They did basically assure him a chance at the end of games to close. He didn't say that specifically, but he implied it. Porter Hodge is a guy he called a dynamic duo with him. Pressly is 36 years old, but he said he heard from Dansby Swanson within 30 seconds of agreeing to this, and he's serious about coming to the Cubs and making something special happen this year. You like what you heard. We'll wait to see what you get. But the Cubs, I still think, excited about Pressly. The bullpen's coming together, but I think they're still a bat short.
That bat could be Bregman, David. You know, Bruce is not just saying this to say it. I like the idea. You know, bring more guys here to Chicago on the north side who have been there and done that in the postseason.
Well, we had a little conversation here when David got so upset yesterday about the fact that they're not spending enough money. During the break, we were like, are they done? Are they really done? How much of that money? Because we had vowed we were going to wait and see exactly how much of that money that they saved on the Bellinger deal was going to be spent on the team, right? Are you pocketing that money? Or are you going to spend it on the team? So they're spending some of it, but there's still some money left over. If they sign Bregman, okay, that's awesome. So the fact that they're not done and they're still looking at other things, I think it's a good sign. And I think that there's going to be another move, even if it's, you know, an infielder or anything. There's going to be something else. They are not done yet. And if they could get a big move out of it, that would be fantastic. And that would be a great way of putting it, kind of hanging around and waiting to see what happens. Do you want that 5-year deal that they offer you, or whatever, 6 years, or would you like to take the money the Cubs are holding right now? And we'll see how that works out, but that would be that's good. It's just good that it's not over and there's still hope for more improvement.
I hope you're right. I'm not sure what you're basing that on. I don't know that
Bruce's
report is great. You guys are suggesting that I'm doubting Bruce. I don't doubt Bruce. I just don't know.
How did I suggest you doubt
Dustin it? Said, well, Bruce has got the goods. I think this is a great report, but I just don't know if it's until he's actually on his way to Wrigley Field and doing his own Zoom conference outside some Houston school talking about how much he wants to play at Wrigley, am I going to believe it?
You're saying there's still a chance.
Slight, slim.
Okay.
And none, maybe. I don't know. I just think that they are still a bat short. I want to get excited about this Cubs season. The spring training 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Pitchers and catchers. It's February 9th or 10th, I believe. Super Bowl Sunday.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
There's too much going on in that day.
There's way too much going on. It's a Super Bowl Sunday. Pitchers and catchers. Got a birthday celebration.
We got a surprise party that I'm throwing.
For yourself.
For myself.
We just don't know about it yet.
It would be a surprise
nor
to me.
Nor does your family.
But I never tell anyone. All right, we got a lot to get to. 312-644-6767. It's Molly and Hall on the Score. KC, how are you, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
We're living the dream. have you seen that Bob Dylan movie yet, The Complete Unknown?
I have not. I'm not a big movie goer, but
I just think you'd like it. You're a singer songwriter. Yeah. It would be perfect.
What have you been doing anyway?
Well, Dylan's probably one of my be all end alls. But yes. I will say that, and most Dylanologists I thought would frown upon it, but most Dylanologists friends of mine have told me I have to see it. So yes. I'll see it. I'll see it eventually.
You must see it.
But now you're on the road covering the Bulls. And tonight, big one against the Celtics. Yeah, the grid. Definitely. Well played. Well played, KC. How big is this next week for Arturis Karnašovas?
I mean, it's huge because, you know, he has said publicly multiple times that they're not done making changes. He's trying to make change. He wants to make change. And this is a difficult landscape in which to make change. But this is when things get serious and opportunities that may not be present currently present themselves, and I personally see a management team ready to act, so we'll see if they can find the right match. And I mean, it's clearly a lot of pressure on him to make some changes because they're currently stuck in the middle where they have been for a long time.
I gotta tell you, I don't know how to feel about the amount of pressure on AK to get something done. Because in the past, we've seen that he did not feel any pressure to get anything done. And he didn't want to get pressured into an Alex Caruso trade at the trade deadline or whomever it might be. Now you keep hearing these rumors about whether Vooch could wind up somehow in Golden State if Jimmy is Jimmy, we got to get to him. If Zach is somehow going to wind up in Milwaukee, that seems insane to me. But will there be something drastic that happens here? Has his thinking changed in terms of what he's willing to kind of do to get anything done?
Yeah, that's the part that is unknown. I mean, like, currently what you hear from the teams that I talk to around the league is that his asking price is high. And, you know, that's not a bad stance to have at this stage. But as you get closer, does he drop that price just to make a deal? I mean, I would say the critical difference to point out between this trade deadline and previous ones, from my view anyway, is that in previous deadlines, they didn't make a move because he wasn't sure he wanted to. If they don't make a move this year, it's because they just couldn't find a deal. And I'm not making excuses for the management team or the Bulls. What I will say is that particularly of contracts, and certainly in the case of LaVine and a little bit in the case of Vucevic, in this day and age with, you know, boring CBA minutiae, aprons, first apron, second apron, it is harder to make trades. That's just the simple fact. Now, yes, Brooklyn has got out in front of this and traded Dennis Schroeder and Dorian Finney-Smith. Now, those contracts were smaller, and in Schroeder's case, was an expiring. So, again, that's the critical difference to me. He wants to make change. He wants to make trades. Will they find a partner? I don't know the answer to that.
Let's just remind people, maybe hit a reset here, because whiteboard it for us, Casey, because what's the purpose that they for trading at this point? Is it because they want to finish the season as poorly as possible so they can protect that number 10 pick? or can they accomplish perhaps doing both because they can be among the 10 worst teams and be in that sort of murky middle? Restate the purpose for why they would want to unload at this point.
Well, I mean, you know, they have said publicly the opposite at Media Day, that the draft pick is not guiding them. I would posit to say that's not fully accurate. I mean, look, if you're in a rebuild situation or retool situation or whatever you want to classify this, you've started to change the makeup of this team with the trade of DeMar DeRozan and Alex Caruso. So this is, by all accounts, a strong draft. If you are retooling and adding young players and trying to develop young players, you need to keep that draft pick. So they're not going to make a bad trade just to get bad, but the whole purpose is to try to, you know, if you make a trade that helps you, your chances to keep that top 10 pick, that's the goal. And, you know, I mean, Vooch and LaVine are playing at all-star level, but where is this franchise going with them playing at all-star level, right? So that's the question that management is asking itself. That's the calculus they're using with which to approach this trade deadline. And, you know, that's why the entire league is, you know, the Bulls are one of the main teams that the league is focused on. Detroit's another one because they've got cap space. Toronto's another one because they can be a conduit for trades. Brooklyn was before they made the two deals, but the Bulls are in the focal point, as is Miami, obviously, with the Jimmy Butler situation.
I'm curious about the Jimmy Butler situation. What I mean, there's a certain level of insanity to it, isn't there? I mean, Jimmy's had an amazing career, but it seems like everywhere he's been, he leaves under bad circumstance, right? It's been repeatedly like Jimmy heading out of town, and I don't know how many more of these he's got left, but he clearly wants out.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, a movable, stubborn force in Pat Riley versus a movable, stubborn force in Jimmy Butler. That's right. Basically what's playing out. Look, Miami got two NBA Finals runs and appearances out of Jimmy Butler. He's played at an incredibly high level, but it's broken. And yes, he has a shelf life. We saw that play out here to some extent, although he did not want to leave here. That's the critical difference between Chicago and Miami. But this followed Jimmy around, and you know, he's probably going to get his way because this has become an untenable situation. Now, will he get his way to get a trade to Phoenix? That's where things get dicey and tricky, because obviously Bradley Beal holds all the power in that equation. But I can't see Miami doing this song and dance suspension for the rest of the season. So I expect Jimmy Butler to be moved by next Thursday.
Patrick Williams responded to getting benched with one of his best games of the season the other night without Zach and Kobe White tonight. Will he continue to come off the bench, and do you think that is his best role moving forward?
The latter is an emphatic yes, and I think that Billy would have been preferred to – and he still may come off the bench tonight. I'm about to head over to shoot around here in Boston shortly. What I would say is, with Zach away from the team for personal reasons and Kobe's status still uncertain, he may have to be inserted in the starting lineup, particularly with who Boston starts at the other end. They've got some pretty good wings in Tatum and Brown. So maybe it's a one-game thing where he goes back into the starting lineup. But I think Billy and the coaching staff hit on something. And quite frankly, I think Patrick hit on something, because every time he goes to the bench, what he talks to us about is how – he feels like freer there and sees more opportunity there. And so he looked like a completely different player to me. And what I loved about it even more, and I reported this in my pre-tip hit on our network, I was told, you know, because we find out the starting lineups after we talked to Billy pregame, and I was told when we found out that he got moved to the bench that Billy was not above using him to close, and that's exactly what he did. So right. I love that. You know, he didn't start. He played aggressively, and then he closed. And he was one of the key critical pieces of that victory. So good for Patrick. And yeah, maybe they've hit on something here. And but tonight I would expect him probably in the starting lineup tonight against Boston.
What's your take on the idea that Bradley Beal rejected any kind of trade to the Bulls? Is that him not wanting to play in the cold, as he said? Is that him wanting to win without having to do anything? I mean, that's got to be the worst contract in the league right now, because they're desperate to get rid of him, but he holds all the cards.
Yeah, well, multiple things. I mean, the first thing to emphasize is there's no guarantee the Bulls would make that trade, even if Bradley Beal did waive. There's no trade clause to come to the Bulls. I think people are assuming that that's a done deal if Bradley Beal waives his no trade clause. I think it's still an internal decision to make, and would certainly have to be sweetened with extensive draft capital. So that's a pretty complicated deal, because I think multiple teams would get involved. But let's posit, you know, that Bradley Beal does say, yeah, I'll waive my no trade clause, and there's enough draft capital in there to give the Bulls, you know, consideration there. What I would say is, you know, I mean, Bradley Beal has a no trade clause for a reason. He has that power, and he does have obviously a relation with Billy Donovan, and things that are said now, you know, can change in a week. I mean, the Miami Heat put out a statement saying we are not trading Jimmy Butler. You know, 10 days later, they put out a statement, we are trading Jimmy Butler. I mean, this is just, that's how the league works. It's fluid. So I don't put much stock into what he's saying now. If he releases a statement, you know, at noon on next Thursday saying I'm not waiving my no trade clause, then it's different, you know. But there's a lot of time between now and next Thursday.
Just so we understand it correctly, besides Matas Buzelis, everybody else on the Bulls roster is a possibility to be traded? Will teams ask about everybody but Matas?
I mean, I wouldn't even put Matas untouchable. I mean, we're putting Matas Buzelis untouchable?
No,
I mean,
I'm just wondering.
The only untouchable I've ever covered is Michael Jordan.
Okay, I mean, Jerry.
Like,
all right.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I mean, like, if the right deal comes along and Matas has to be a piece in it, I mean, you're crazy not to consider that. So, no, there are no untouchables on this roster. What I would say is, yes, it's not just Vooch and Zach and Lonzo extensive. This is more boring CBA minutia, but the Bulls are in a little bit of a pickle with Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu, because they were heralded for signing them to bargain deals, and as they should be, but a new stipulation in the CBA limits you to extending them at 140% of that number. They both outplayed those contracts well for beyond 140%. Do you proactively get out in front of that and trade one of those guys before they hit restricted free agency next summer? I mean, these, again, are the questions you have to think in long-term situations at the front office. So, yes, everybody's in play for the Bulls, and they are considering everything.
Real quickly.
That sounds like management speak. We are considering everything.
No, I understand what you're saying. Real quickly, though, what would be the market for Josh Giddey?
Oh, God.
Nothing, especially because he's a restricted free agent.
Because, there's not a chance. I'm guessing you could get more for Alex Caruso if you could get him back. Oh, boy. There you go. That's editorial commenting. Casey, thank you, buddy. Great stuff.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks, man.
Keep up the good work.
Enjoy Boston.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
In the past months, the Chicago sports stars like Mark Burley, Sammy Sosa, and Derrick Rose have received honors that mark their legacy one way or another. Who is the next Chicago sports star who will be hearing about being honored in a similar fashion?
Based on the Mark Burley statue, what it's going to look like, what the pose will be, and that's been fun to consider. I think it seems also very familiar, because we just got done talking about Sammy Sosa and, well, Sammy, do you want the statue or the retired jersey? Both! And obviously Derrick Rose night at the United Center brought up a lot of memories. I think that it's got to be one of the Blackhawks, doesn't it? I think that maybe Jonathan Toews at some point, but is he coming back? I would think it'd have to be a Blackhawk, given how many players in that range. I know everybody in the organization kind of wants to forget that sometimes, or maybe wait till it's more appropriate to remember that or honor that, but I would think it would maybe Jonathan Toews. I don't know if it's going to be a Bears Hall of Famer. I don't know if anybody's that close between Lance Briggs and Tillman and Olin, possibly. But I think if you look at somebody who might be outside the box a little bit, Candace Parker, you know, she's out of the WNBA, maybe the Chicago Sky, looking for some sort of buzz, retires her jersey. She won a championship here in her hometown. I'm not quite sure, but maybe John Lester, if it's a Cub, maybe John Lester's the next guy. That 2016 team doesn't really have anybody that screams Hall of Famer or legacy. They were just it was just a great team. Joe Maddon? I don't know. What do you think, Dustin? I don't know if there's any definitive guy who's kind of waiting his turn, because the three we just mentioned, they were all kind of due.
Well, I do think this is a very fun question, and I'll just say it. I may not answer this the way we want it answered, but you just brought up the 2016 Cubs, David, and what my original thought was, and I know he wasn't an athlete per se, but if you're going to honor anybody for the 2016 team in some shape or fashion, wouldn't it be Theo Epstein? Wouldn't he be the person that
I
you would?
I thought you were going to say Joe Maddon. Honest to God,
when you just set that up.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But I would go Theo Epstein. Now, David, I think you make a really good point about Jonathan. I don't think you can do Kane because he's still playing.
Right.
Taves, maybe he comes back. Maybe he doesn't. It also, like, they might be the team that needs the best PR hit that hasn't done something yet, meaning the Blackhawks. So that's why maybe the Taves thing makes sense. Where are we, though? Where are we with Steve McMichael? So Steve McMichael is entering the Hall of Fame. He's getting that honor, which is like the ultimate honor. Will the Bears do a patch or a decal, or will they paint something on the field to recognize and honor him? And is that the same? I don't think they're going to retire the number 76, and I don't think they should, but could that be could there be a Mongo patch or a Mongo sticker or a Mongo paint job on the field? Is that connect? It's not a statue, it's not a retirement jersey, but I actually think the next one, if Mongo fits the criteria, I think a Mongo patch or sticker is what we probably would see next. And the 2016 Cubs, for me, it's Theo.
So I looked at this a little differently, too. I was thinking about these three people who are mentioned here. So you got Burley, who is almost like in self-exile, not exile, just a guy that likes to be by himself. He's down on the farm and hunting and, you know, had a great career here. Always welcome to anything, but doesn't really go out that much. So it was great that they brought him in and they reconnect, and they're going to do the statue, and that's wonderful. And it makes sense. He's one of the greatest players I've ever seen. I think that that Derrick Rose had left the team and was at different places, and was, you know, it wasn't until he retired that you could have him back and then kind of celebrate what was a career cut by injury. Sammy Sosa, now that's an actual exile, and that's a very long time that you went, and that was because he didn't apologize. So you got the apology, but he wouldn't apologize for what you might have wanted to apologize, but he said apology. Let's just celebrate him. I think that there will be some great Ditka celebration at some point, and he will be honored, for one of the great football lives of this century and very important
that's Chicago. That's a good one, too.
And I think that he's never not been welcome.
He's never not been honored.
No, he's never not been
honored. Look at the commercial.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's you're paying homage to Mike Ditka in the commercial.
But it occurred to me, like, am I wrong to think that at some point, and, you know, I'm not saying it's going to come now, but at some point maybe Brian Urlacher is kind of back in the fold. He left in a bad way, kind of, right? His career probably ended the wrong way.
Yeah.
And, there are teammates of his who I've talked to that aren't happy with some of the political stuff that's come out. I think that Urlacher will at some point be welcomed back and have a moment with the Bears. And I don't even think he's ostracized or removed, but he's just not with them at this point for whatever reason.
It's a kind of thing, if you're talking about alumni relations, you know, with Bears alumni, that Kevin Warren, if he's very smooth and as polished as people say, and we have seen at times, maybe that's an area that he could improve.
Olin, I mean, that's a great one that you mentioned earlier. I mean, they ought to give him a call and apologize. All right. We got a lot to get to.
Tim Anderson digging in, 1-for-4 tonight.
Good matchup here for a low ball hitter, sinking fastball.
Anderson hits it in the air right, back at the wall, and the White Sox win it! Well, you can throw the party, but you never know how it's going to turn out.
Unreal.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Wow. Well, you can throw the party, but sometimes the party doesn't last. We are delighted to welcome in Scott Merkin from the MLB Network covering the Chicago White Sox. Had a great sit-down conversation with Tim Anderson, and he joins us on the Score Hotline brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire. Aturo.com. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Gentlemen, how are you doing? It's not how long the party lasts, but the intensity of it when it's going on, right? Is that it?
Seems like the party's over. Turn the lights out.
Yeah, turn out the lights is right. I feel so conflicted about everything that happened with Tim Anderson. And, you know, he was a hell of a player, and then he kind of fell off the ledge. How is he recovering from that? And, you know, I saw the quote about him hoping to enjoy baseball again. And I got to tell you, Scott, like, I would prefer if he would talk about getting back to the player he was. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just tough.
Yeah, you know, I had a good talk with him Wednesday. We talked for about 20 minutes. The story's running today in my newsletter. But, you know, he said that he had a couple, when he got released by the Marlins July 5th last year, he had a couple teams or he had a little bit of interest where he could have kept playing last year, but decided it was time to get healthy, both physically and mentally, and really work on himself. And actually, I had reached out a couple times before then, and when I did hear from him in this offseason, he said that he had, you know, kind of just, I don't know if gone silent is the right phrase, but was really focused on working on himself and working on his baseball. He lives in Atlanta now with his family, so he's really been doing that. And he was pretty candid admitting that, you know, he made some mistakes too, but there were injuries along the way. And that's, you know, the problem with, you know, when you kind of rely on a rebuild like they're doing now and like they did before, the prospects look great, but, you know, you can stub your toe pretty quickly. He hurt his hand in Texas, which cost him, what was the last 2 months of the 22 season, right? Yeah. Got to put all the years together at this point. And then 23, he hurt his left knee really early on, and that really screwed up his whole swing. He came back where he felt like he wasn't 100%, but wanted to come back for the team, developed some bad habits, and just was never really able to get over those bad habits. I mean, it's strange. It really is. From like 2016 to 2022, especially like 2021, 20, you know, the beginning of 22, he was as electric as any player in the game, right? I mean, he was, I don't want to say the face of baseball, but he was certainly up there, you know, started an all-star game, played on Team USA for WBC, won a batting title, was close to 100 home runs for his career, and then the last 2 years, by his own admission, have been, you know, pretty bad. He's very excited to get to work with Ron Washington, who's been kind of, I don't know, is infield whisperer the right phrase? I mean, does really good work with infielders. And he knows Ryan Goins, who's a coach there, who he played with the White Sox. He knows Tim Laker, who was a minor league coach for the White Sox. So he's excited to get this opportunity. He feels like he's in a better spot than he was at this point last year.
So I understand why you'd want to talk to him. The Tim Anderson story is one full of mystery and intrigue and all those things, Merk. But I don't know what his goal was in talking to you and going on the Foul Territory podcast and maybe starting to make the rounds. Is he trying to send the message that he's healthy physically and mentally? Is he trying to send them? What is he hoping people get from hearing him talk about his experience? Because I think it's easy to look at him and wonder if he's got anything left.
Yeah, it's a good question. I asked him during the interview if he thought about it. He has, you know, we had talked the year before, I believe we were in Kansas City, and we had talked about some of his outside business interests that he has. And I had asked him, had he really thought after, you know, another struggle till a year last year with Florida about retiring? And he said, not going back to baseball more so than retiring, I guess, you know, you're 31, 30. It's kind of tough to say retiring at that point, but it would be sort of. And he said that, no, you know, he said his confidence was shot. And, you know, but he knew it was still in there and he wanted to kind of find it. So it's a good question about, I mean, I think he's just kind of, he was waiting for the right moment when he felt comfortable, I think, to talk about what he had gone through, to talk about it. And he really had not, you know, said anything since he got released. He, as he said, he had stayed kind of quiet, hadn't even shown much. Like if you look at his social media, aside from him hinting a little bit here and there. So you really didn't know. You didn't know what direction he was going. And maybe, like you said, this is his way of saying, okay. And he admitted, you know, he said he has no leverage. He has no leg up. Really, this is the first time in his career because that he's fighting for a job out of spring training. When he was a minor leaguer with the Sox, it wasn't fighting for a job. It was just, when is he ready, right? You know, he was a top prospect. When is he going to make the team? So there was no fighting for a job, really. It was going to be his when he had hit that point. Now he goes in as a non-roster invite, you know, minor league deal, and he's doing everything, you know, fighting for that roster spot with the Angels.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is kind of emblematic of kind of what happened in the last rebuild, right? The idea that all these guys that were, you know, it just never happened. It just didn't, for whatever reason, it didn't come to fruition. You had this team and you had this hope and, no, it just did. I mean, in retrospect, and I know there was kind of a self-inflicted portion of it. He talked to AJ about how the scandal kind of slowed him down. It was weird.
He said the same thing. I talked to him a little bit about that, too. Yeah. You know, he said that, yeah, he had readily admitted that. And he said that went into the mental part of things, where he had to kind of figure out who he wanted to be moving forward. So, you know, that it was all part of it. But, you know, you're right. I mean, Tim was... Not putting it all on Tim, obviously, because there's a lot of good young players in that last rebuild, really good young players. But Tim kind of represented the kind of highs in that rebuild and then kind of the low points too, right? I mean, you know, with his struggles. I mean, was there a bigger moment than when he hit that, we kind of referred to it as the stalk-off in Iowa into the right field corn, right? But was there a bigger moment aside from maybe the Game 3 win in the playoffs against Houston during the rebuild in that Field of Dreams game? It was unreal, right? And I mean, he was an all-star starter. He was a batting champ. He was, you know, Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. And now, you know, this is where he is now. But I mean, you look at that entire core who were very talented. I mean, there's no question about it. But Tim is on a minor league deal with the Angels. Eloy Jimenez is on a minor league deal with the Rays.
Yeah.
And Moncada and Abreu are still waiting for, you know, I'm sure they're getting offers. I mean, you know, they're still waiting for a deal for their next employment right now. That was kind of the position player core of that rebuild.
Is Tim Anderson bitter about his White Sox exit or experience?
No, not at all. I think he's kind of moved on. He did have a funny line where I asked him, you know, did he feel bad or did he pay much attention since he was, you know, off of baseball to what happened to the Sox last year? And he said, no, you know, I didn't have time to feel bad for them. He goes, I felt like I went through 222 losses myself. He goes, so I didn't have time to really feel bad for anybody else. I had to worry about myself. And I get that, right? I get that he was focused on just getting himself back for getting ready for baseball.
Scott, you know, it's wild, but we talked earlier today about this idea that San Diego is talking about trading Dylan Cease and – you know, what the Cubs would have to give up because the Cubs are apparently interested. And then you go back and you kind of revisit that deal. And Drew Thorpe is still suffering inflammation, right? Suffering problems after that surgery he had. They were going to shave down a bone spur or something. I mean, and he's the key piece. He was the guy that was, you know, moved from the Yankees and their big trade, and then moves to the White Sox in the Cease deal. And, you know, I know he's still a young guy, young pitcher, but it's not really going well.
Yeah, I think probably a little early to judge that, but I see what you're saying. You know, I mean, Thorpe is, you know, Thorpe can always say he was traded for Juan Soto and Dylan Cease, right? That's pretty, that's something to put on your resume right there. But yeah, I was a little surprised when I talked to him last Friday at Sox Fest Live that he said he had had a couple setbacks during the offseason. He'd had a cortisone shot that morning. And then in texting with Chris Getz, you know, Getz admitted there's always a concern when there's a setback, but they also felt that you know, they handle this and that he would be ready by April. So he's going to be behind, you know, he hasn't thrown a bullpen yet. So he's going to be behind come spring training. And they're certainly in his first full major league season, certainly not going to rush anything. So, you know, they're still not at the contention stage. So if you're going to, you know, pull back a little bit injury wise, now might be the time, right? I mean, so, but I mean, yeah, I mean, he's a key guy. Ariarte got to the majors last year. Mm-hmm. Could be a back-end starter, could be a reliever. Zavala, very young. Didn't have a great year average-wise last year, but, I mean, I believe is 20 right now, so a lot of room to grow.
Right.
And then Wilson was just kind of a veteran guy to help out right now in the bullpen. So I think the time will still tell, but, yeah, the injury is not what you ever want to see for a young guy like that.
So, Mark, there were some reports and conversation based on an Athletic summary of where the White Sox are looking in spring training and saying that they have had or they did have conversations with the Reds about Luis Robert Jr., which leads you to believe they're still shopping him. I think they might have more value waiting until the trade deadline and gambling that he would still get off to a good start and be more valuable. But what do you think their thought process is a couple weeks before spring training as it pertains to Luis Robert Jr.?
Yeah, I think it could be similar to what they did with Dylan Cease last year, right? Because that was the same. Granted, a different situation, you know, pitcher versus position player. But Dylan was, you know, had a great spring, started out tremendously. There were some rumors about where he was going before. There were rumors about him going back to the winter meetings, actually. And I think they came to a point in spring training where they decided this is the time we have to move him. You know, we can't take a risk. Whatever he brings more, if he pitches 2 months well for us, we can't take a risk of, you know, something happening or him struggling and then the value going down. So they, you know, kind of, I don't know if rounded up is the best word, but put out that they needed the best offers. They got him and they made the trade. I would not be stunned if they did that with Luis Robert at some point during spring training. Luis Robert is a dynamic player. He's a five-tool talent. He had, as complete a season as I've seen with the White Sox in 2023, but he has been injured quite a bit by his own admission. I mean, he doesn't need to admit it. We've seen it, right? We've seen him absent from the injuries and had a rough year last year. Now, I think that's more the anomaly than what Luis Robert is about talent-wise. But if you keep him April, May, you know, looking at the trade deadline and he gets hurt, even for 2 or 3 weeks, that may lessen the value. So I would not be surprised the way Chris is running this if they kind of get into spring training, see how he looks, and then maybe, you know, do the same kind of path that they did with Dylan Cease.
You know, we know that the future looks pretty good for the White Sox. They had the lefty pitchers out, you know, George Wilklaw. You were you know all about who was president Sox Fest, and it seems like the past was well represented. I don't know what to make of the present, you know, after the 41-121 season. We were talking about, you know, we had a chance to talk to Will Venable, and a really bright guy, and you look at some of the changes they've made. If they get 20 games better, they're still going to lose 100. It's crazy to look at how far it fell last year, Mark. What is the best case scenario? Is this team in the midst of losing 100 games? In other words, not just this year, but moving forward to next year, when does the losing period of the program end and the winning begin?
You know, I think if you talk to the Sox, they'd like the losing to end now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, last year was rough. There's no question about it. In the context of a rebuild or not, 121 losses is not what you ever planned for. You know, I mean, you may go into the season saying, okay, you know, like last year, this is going to be a learning year. This is going to be a developing year. We're going to do what we can. But then again, you know, they, not to make excuses, but they had really no room for error and then had nothing but error at the start, right? Robert got hurt. Jimenez got hurt. Moncada got hurt. Vaughn and Benintendi both struggled to begin the first half. So, you know, there's the problem right there at the beginning, at least. So I don't know. I mean, I would think more, you know, towards 26, 27. Looks like, you know, if you go by the natural path of the rebuild, more is kind of the building towards that sort of successful year. But, you know, I don't want to put a number on it now because you just don't know what happened.
Right.
You know, I remember talking to Edgar Caro earlier in the offseason about, you know, one of their young catchers, that he thought they were going to be better this year just because there's going to be a lot of young guys who are going to be really hungry and really competitive and really want to show something when they get there. Now, that's true, but also you have a lot of young guys who are learning, right, which is the whole point of playing them this year, the whole point of getting them out there and letting them take their lumps and then moving forward and seeing what they learn and seeing what we need to fill in. So I think both can be true. So, like you said, if they finish 61 and 101, that's a 20-game jump, right? So, you know, the bar is not extremely high, but I think they'd like to win as soon as possible. But I think it's still, you know, this year is more about giving these prospects who are ready a chance, seeing what you have, seeing what they need, and then seeing what you need as a team beyond that.
So they're not likely to add anybody before spring training or opening day in your mind? Do you think that their payroll is going to stay where it is and they're not likely to add any veterans, whether it's in the bullpen and the position? They have openings available, plenty in that lineup.
I think everything is fluid. You know, I think it depends on, you know, moves they make, you know, and I also think Chris and Will Venable met with us last Thursday at the ballpark, a week ago Thursday. And he said that the heavy lifting had been done, but he said, you know, there's still a lot of guys out there, right? There's still quite a few guys out there. And I just saw someone tweet, not a lot of open 40-man spots out there. So there may be guys that you thought they wouldn't add that they still could as spring training moves on. I mean, nothing says they can't add someone March 1st either, right, if they need someone, if someone's still available. So I think you'd never say it's done. But according to Chris, when we talked to him, kind of the heavy lifting is behind them going into 25.
Great stuff, Scott. Appreciate your time, buddy. Good catching up.
Thanks, Merck.
Always good talking to you guys. Take care.
That is the handsome and intelligent Merck and Brother.